y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of child abuse, child murder, and sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised.
On January 27th, 2020, Letitia Stout called the El Paso County Sheriff's Department to report her 11-year-old stepson, Gannon, missing. She said that he'd gone to play with friends, but should have been back home an hour ago. Detectives arrived at the Stout home, unknowingly beginning an investigation that would last years, revealing that Gannon had been brutally murdered at the hands of someone that was supposed to love and care for him. Investigators spent months collecting evidence and digging through lie after lie before finally securing an arrest warrant to charge Letitia Stout with the murder of her stepson.
Jeez.
Yucky.
Yeah. So last week we talked about just the case overall. We ended with the discovery of Gannon's body, which just so happened to be found in the same place that she so happened to visit in Florida.
Yeah, it sure did.
Like almost exactly. Yeah. Which is a strange coincidence and does not indicate that she had anything to do with it. Thank you very much. But now we're going to talk about the trial. And we just kind of thought that since the whole trial was streamed, and of course, you guys know I love to watch a trial. I really do. I get sucked in. Like, I really like it. It's very interesting. Just all of it is really interesting. So I watched a ton of it. I did not watch the whole thing, of course. It was 6-7 weeks long, something like that. It was pretty long.
Wow. Yeah, that's a long time.
So I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched a lot of it. So we decided, you guys like the Alec Murdoch,
yeah,
you guys like that recap so much, we're gonna do another one, but for crazy old Maurice.
Yes, I know highlights of the trial, but I am going to be learning about a lot of it just like you are in real time. So
yes, so obviously we're going to start with opening statements, and the prosecutor talks about how Letitia took a video recording of Gannon the night before he disappeared. So that's January 26th, 2020. And if you'll remember, she said that he had knocked over a candle and it had set the carpet on fire. And he'd also gotten burned himself. But in this recording, she is saying, now, I don't know what to do about this. Okay, we're going to have to sell some stuff to pay for this, okay? And it's such a heartbreaking thing to listen to because he's very, like, you can tell he's crying, he's upset, and he's like, okay. And she keeps saying, now you promised me you didn't do this on purpose, right? And he's like, no, I didn't do it on purpose. And she's like, okay, I'm just making sure, whatever. She's like, we got to figure out all the stuff we need to sell because we've got to be able to fix this carpet or the landlord's going to kick us out. And he's like, okay. And then he says at the end, it is so sad. He said, I'm just really worried about my burns. And all she's talking about is selling furniture to pay for the damage.
And guilt tripping him.
And guilt tripping him. Yes. He also talks about the many deliberate actions that Letitia took in the process of covering up what happened to Gannon. And that pointing to her not only being responsible for the death of Gannon, which we know she is, that's not the question in this trial, but that she's also legally and criminally sane at the time of the murder. She knew that what she was doing was wrong. Look at all the steps she took to cover it up. So that's their, you know, kind of big, I wouldn't say hurdle even, but that's what they've got to prove. So the defense opening statement, he took an interesting tactic, I thought. He kind of started with, you know, look, you guys, like everything that you've seen so far, this is like the G-rated stuff. This is the stuff that goes on the news and like whatever. And he's like, what you're going to see the rest of this trial, you can never unsee, basically. Like, it's horrible. It's awful. Everything's not good. And it's going to be very difficult. And he says, you know, Letitia seems like a lost cause because you see all this evidence against her and you see all these things and like all this stuff. And he's like, you know, but I can't just quit. I can't just check out. Like, you know, I have to keep going. And he's like, you know, and why do I have to do that? Because it wouldn't be fair. It wouldn't be fair to Gannon. It wouldn't be fair to Letitia. And he actually says, now, some of you might say, well, who gives a shit about Mrs. Stauch? And he's like, and I get it, but the law does. And then he's like, you know, wars were fought over this stuff, you know, the right to remain silent. And this stuff goes really far back. And he's like, you know, all the way back to Paul Revere riding his horse and saying, the British are coming, the British are coming. Like, he literally like invoked Paul Revere. And he's like, this is old stuff, okay? Like,
side note, I don't know if this man knows this, but Miss KB was watching something about, like, I guess it was, like, American history, what's the right word? Like, things that we thought were fact, but they're actually not. And yeah. Paul Revere never did that, so it wasn't Paul Revere.
Oh, but somebody did?
Somebody did, but I don't even think that they said that those words. But Paul Revere.
Can you imagine being the guy that did that? And then the history books being like, and thank God for Paul Revere. And you're like, Paul was asleep. I did that. Like,
yeah. What the shit? Like,
yeah. Like, yeah. Seriously?
Huh. Well, that's how I feel again about certain one hit wonders. My God, Maxwell, he did. I always feel like somebody's watching me. And everybody's like, oh, Michael Jackson, so great. And it's like, oh.
Yeah. 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 That's tough.
Semisonic, everybody thought it was Green Day. So.
Oh, that's funny. So, yeah, he just talks about how, like, you know, laws were formed based on this stuff. You know, it's important. This is how the law is. You know, it's the jury's job to apply the law appropriately, even if you don't like the defendant, kind of thing. He talks about taking the media coverage with a grain of salt. And he says, he's like, we lost in the court of public opinion. We lost. And he's like, but this is the court of law. And it's your job to listen to the evidence in its completion. And if by the end of you hearing everything and you hear our experts too, and you still feel like she was sane at the time, then that's fine. But just as long as you are taking all of the pieces and applying them.
What is that quote from Legally Blonde? Law is reason free from passion. Law is reason free from...
I think it is passion.
Law is reason free from passion.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he starts to talk about and tries to paint a picture that Letitia did, in fact, love Gannon, which is just simply not true, but
yeah,
that she did love him and they had a good relationship. And he starts talking about how, you know, when she was a child, she was left in the care of her mother's boyfriends all the time. This was not safe for her. There was sexual abuse that happened, not only by these men allegedly, but other people in her family or other people that she knew. And he says there has to be some psychological crack to go from teacher, loving mother, and stepmother to a killer of an 11-year-old. She didn't wake up that day and say, I'm going to kill my stepson Gannon today. No, she was killing her demons.
Are we going to pretend like she was this pristine and perfect teacher, loving mother and stepmother this entire time, and then all of a sudden one day it's like, whoopsie, this happened? Because
you better bet your ass we are. Yeah,
I know too much. Like, mm-hmm. Get the fuck out. Okay, all right,
exactly. Yeah, So, yeah, from the defense's standpoint,
if we're going to talk about past, bring it all up.
Well, exactly.
Mention it all.
Exactly. And it's not going to look good for her. So, you know, and I get it. They've got to do something. But yeah, he's talking about you don't go from being a respected member of the community. He didn't say those words, but you know what I mean? Like, you know,
that's
like
the theme there, right?
Yeah, everything was normal. She's an educator and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden she kills her stepson. Like, doesn't happen that way. So he says that to Letitia, she wasn't killing Gannon. It was her trauma and like demons that were being killed and being attacked. And she didn't realize, you know, what was actually happening, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. They also introduced that Letitia has been diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder, which used to be multiple personality disorder, and now it is not. And that, you know, the jury is going to hear from a mental health professional that believes that Letitia does, in fact, have DID, and that the prosecution will have their own experts. He's like, they're going to have people that they've got that are going to tell you that our, you know, expert is wrong. He's like, but what's important is that you listen to all of it. We want, like, my job is just to get her side out there, basically, you know, and just listen to all of it before you make a decision. He came across to me as very, like, down to earth and just like, you know, I mean, he, you know, he kind of was like, look, this is bad. Like, I know this is bad. And there's a lot of evidence there. He seemed like he was just kind of trying to be, you know, real with them or whatever. He was pretty, I thought he did well. Like, I think he would have been liked by the jury if I had to guess. Like, I don't know. He seemed okay. So anyway, Al Stout, Gannon's father, was the first to testify. This was so heartbreaking. He talks about his last memory with Gannon. And, you know, he was out of town at the time that all of this happened for a work trip. And he said that his last memory of being with Gannon was he told Gannon, I'm always going to be in your heart and you're always going to be in my heart. And Gannon said, okay, daddy, I love you. And then he's like, I'm going to go finish watching my Pokemon now or whatever. But it was so, so sad that, like, obviously he was trying to reassure Gannon because maybe he was saying, like, I'm going to miss you. I don't want you to go on this trip or, you know, I don't know how kids, you know, do. And he's just like, oh, you know, well, I'm always with you and you're always with me and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, like, obviously now the meaning that that has, knowing that Gannon was killed during this time, it's just heartbreaking.
Of course it is.
He testified that Letitia had told him that Gannon had knocked a candle over that burned Gannon's arms and that his skin was bubbling up on both of his arms.
Jeez.
She never took him to get any medical attention. None of that. And she changed the story about how she learned the candle had been knocked over. And when she learned that his skin was so badly burned, like, at one point she said that she saw the candle get knocked over because Gannon had been grounded from his Nintendo Switch and he was playing it anyway. And she walked in the room and he was trying to hide it and the candle gets knocked over or whatever. And then she says it at another time that she was like laying in bed or something and the smoke alarms go off. So she gets up, grabs the kids. They go get in the car to drive around to get away from the fire, supposedly, or something. And then she was going to call the fire department or something. I don't know. What? And that when they were in the car and she looked down at Gannon, she was like, oh my God, your arms are super burned. But like in the video that she took, he's very concerned about these burns. There's no way that he never said a word to her about them. Like, anyway, so, you know, she changes everything. She had told Al that Gannon had stayed home from school that day due to constipation. That was the first time I had heard that was why. I know that she had said because his stomach was hurting before, but she said he had been constipated and he didn't want to have an accident at school when the constipation resolved itself. So he stayed home because he was nervous about that, which kind of explains why then he would have been able to go to a friend's house that night. Like, it wasn't like a stomach bug or whatever.
Sure. Okay.
Al discusses previous instances in which Letitia manipulates others to get her way. She filed 2 fraudulent burglary reports in the few years before Gannon's murder and had admitted to Al that they were false. She admitted to shooting a gun out of the window of the home at one point.
Yes.
She had told Al that she was pregnant with twins at one point, which he believes is a completely false claim, that she was never pregnant. And then he talks about, you know, what we talked about, where she had reported people that he worked with for sexual harassment, and that's how they ended up moving to Colorado Springs from Alaska. But he testifies to that being false as well. So it's definitely not, first of all, everything that she's ever said basically doesn't bode well for her, because it's going to come up in trial. And mm-hmm. she says these things in recorded phone calls and during interrogations and, you know, all kinds of stuff. Obviously, that's all going to come out. But a history of faking injury, faking, you know, I mean, we know that that morning she called or texted her boss and said her stepdad had been run over by a car. And that's why she couldn't come
murdered,
in that day.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah, like, you know, so anyway, I mean, that obviously just doesn't help. He said that Letitia had told him that she thought Gannon had it out for her or had been like coming for her. And she thought he needed to get into therapy. Al was like, Gannon, not only would he not have hurt her, he couldn't have hurt her. Like, that didn't make any sense to me. We did get him into therapy anyway, but clearly he was not trying to attack her.
This is so reminiscent because we just covered the Natalia Grace on Doc Jams.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got 4 parts covered, all 6 episodes, but this is very reminiscent of that. Like,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I am absolutely in no position to try to diagnose anyone with any kind of mental disorder, illness, or anything like that. But what I'm hearing about Letitia, personally, I believe allegedly, it sounds kind of similar to like borderline personality disorder. Like, I hate you, don't leave me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And at one point, she gets diagnosed with that by the prosecution.
Okay.
Expert. So yeah, for sure. Al also talks about how Letitia basically had run-ins with everybody in her life. She would have disagreements or get into it with people, you know, everybody that was around her. Basically, she wasn't getting along with the principal that worked at her school because she believed that she was more educated than this principal. The principal shouldn't be telling her what to do, because what do they know? Like, you know, just,
oh my,
like, she was just that way with everybody, apparently. So Al talks about how he learned that Gannon was missing and him flying back home to look for Gannon. And Letitia picks him up in a rental car, and how that was like the first red flag to him. It just didn't make sense. She had told him that her car was parked at the school that she worked at. That's where it was. And so at one point he's driving around trying to look for Gannon. And he passes by the school, and so he goes into the parking lot. He was like, just felt like he needed to go see her car there. And it wasn't there. And he drove around the parking lot like 6 times, and it wasn't there. So he knew that she was lying to him about where her car was. Like, why would you need to do that? You know, it just wasn't making sense. So that's when he really started to question her involvement, what she knew, you know, all of that. And then he's working with the police to record phone calls. They play a call between Al and Letitia that's like 2 hours long.
Wow.
It is, I didn't listen to the whole thing. It is bizarre. Every call that I've listened to, several calls between the two of them, every call that they have with each other, she, like, I want to know, is the behavior she's displaying in these calls normal for him? Because he's handling it like a champ. Like, he's very calm with her. He's very collected. He's not getting real angry with her. You know, he's trying to keep his cool, keep her talking. And he's being coached by the FBI or law enforcement or whoever is there with him. The goal is to keep her on the phone and all that kind of stuff. But her reactions are just over the top. she talks in circles. She doesn't make any sense. She freaks out. Like, he asks her at one point, he's like, you know, you told me to be straight up with you and I'm going to do that. And he's like, so I've got a tough question I need to ask you, but I'm just going to ask you straight up. I'm doing what you want me to do. And she's like, okay. And he's like, did you kill Gannon? And she does that like, wow, I can't believe you could even ask me that. How could you even ask me that? And she's like screaming and losing her mind about how offended she is that he could even ask her that. How could he think of her that way? And like, at one point he's like, well, was it an accident? Did something happen that like you didn't mean to happen and you freaked out and, you know, whatever. And yeah. She says to him, Al, I'm a teacher. I've been working with kids for however many years. Don't you think that if an accident happened, I'm smart enough to know how to handle it or where to go for help? I would know how to handle that. Like,
okay, but that is so, it's 100%, I don't know if manipulative is the right word, but it feels like it. It also feels like gaslighting to the nth degree. But based on what she has said in her interrogation, the multiple interrogations that she had or interviews with the police, where according to her, there have been things that have happened and she didn't handle them well.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a home invasion and you get raped and then they abduct your stepson and you don't say anything until, like,
right.
Is that indicative of you being able to handle a stressful, emergent situation? Because I don't think so.
Right? I mean, yeah, good point. Because she talks to him, like, just in a condescending, like, I've been doing this for a long time, and I know how to handle this, you know? And she says all this stuff with a straight, I mean, I can't see your face, obviously, it's a recorded phone call, but you know what I'm saying? Like, just, nothing phases her. She's talking about it like, of course I know how to handle this. This is what I do for a job. Like, I can't believe you would think that I wouldn't know what to do and like blah, blah, blah. And I could never hurt a kid. And like, I don't know, all this stuff. They play another call between Al and Letitia where she begs Al to get her immunity. Now, remember, at one point she said that first it was Eduardo that raped her and then took Gannon. And then she found out about this guy, Quincy Brown, who had been in the area and was on like a most wanted list or something like that. I forget exactly where Quincy's name came in, but it was something she'd like seen on the news or something. So then all of a sudden she's talking about, oh, well, Quincy Brown is the one who did this. Like, yeah, that's definitely who it was. So she says that she needs immunity because she can give the police information, but she's scared to give them the information because Quincy Brown knows personal details about her and she feels like he's going to come get her. So she wants immunity so that she can tell them the information they need, blah, 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 blah.
Always the victim, aren't we, Letitia?
Always. And the fact that she had the nerve to ask for immunity,
mm-hmm.
You know, like this is Gannon's father. And to his credit, he is so good with her. He's just like he keeps saying, like, you've got to tell me the truth. If I'm going to be able to help you, you have to tell me the truth. The way that I want this to play out is that you and I stand together. Like, you know, we stand by each other through the whole thing. I want to stand by you, but you've got to tell me the truth. Can't keep lying to me. Like, I need to know what's actually happening. Whatever happened, we can get through it together, but I need to know what happened.
God, that must have made him sick to his stomach, and he did it anyway. This obviously, unfortunately, to me, maybe says that this is not his first rodeo with Letitia with this kind of stuff.
That's what I'm, yeah, because he is so calm with her, and he's not acting like, okay, why are you talking this way, or why are you acting this way? Like, it seems like behavior that he's used to, because you would think that if it's totally unlike her, that he might say some things like that. Like, hey,
what is going on here?
Yeah, what's going on?
Why are you talking like this?
Exactly. And he doesn't. So And he, you know, he makes it clear that he believes that she's sane through the whole thing, you know, and that kind of lends itself to, like you said, this is not his first rodeo with her. She, and it, I mean, you know, she filed fake sexual harassment suits. She did two false burglaries that she later told him were false, you know, like. This is a pattern for her.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't lend itself to, well, you know, this was a psychological break that was completely out of the norm for me. And all of a sudden, I, you know, like all right. This stuff. The crime scene analyst testified in a body cam recording of Letitia was played during, this was like during the initial search for Gannon. And she just, what stuck out to me about that was just how eerily calm, cool, and collected she was talking to the police. She knows full well at this point Gannon is dead. And she's just like, oh, yeah. And, you know, like, you know, kids, sometimes you got to remind them stuff. And he was supposed to go hang out with his friends. And, you know, sometimes he'd forget to tell us where. But, you know, that's just how kids are. And just like the way she's talking about it is just, and she's obviously trying to throw off. Like, she wants them to think that he ran away at this point because she mentions the search, which they later found on his phone, which says, can my parents find my phone if it's turned off? And she's like, that's why I think he's with somebody that he knows, because he searched that. So,
ugh.
All right. So one of the people that testified is Nicole Mobley. She's one of the neighbors. She said that Letitia was acting weird during the time that Gannon was missing. She said that she saw that he was missing on a neighborhood like Facebook post. She and her husband immediately like got dressed, went out looking for him. You know, it's January, it's cold, it's sleeting, it's snowing, like all the stuff. She's like, we went out immediately. So she's like, while we're out looking around, you know, on foot, like we're outside, she noticed that Letitia was home the whole time. And she's like, I know she was home because she was answering the door and people were going to talk to her at her home or whatever, but she's like, she never came out to look for him, which I thought was weird. Now, we have covered cases before where when a child is reported missing, the police will tell sometimes one parent to stay in the home so that if the child calls or comes home, somebody's there, right? But she said, because the prosecutor asked her, did you see any law enforcement vehicles, any lights? Did the law enforcement ever come to the house during this time? And she's like, no. So we can assume that she was not given that information by them if they're not there during that time. And she says they were out looking until like 2 or 3 in the morning and wow, never saw law enforcement. So she ends up like the night that Gannon was reported missing and they went out, she had sent Letitia a message on Facebook asking, hey, is there anywhere specific we should start looking or whatever? Letitia blocked her on Facebook. She never replied to that email or message, and she just blocked her.
Whoa.
So on February 19th, 2020, because she had been blocked from her first account, she made a new profile and messaged Letitia from that one, trying to get information about, you know, what was going on with Gannon. Now, Letitia is the very definition of you dumb bitch, because she starts messaging with Nicole Mobley and she is telling her, a man broke into my home, assaulted me. He took Gannon along with a suitcase from the home and all this stuff. So she ends up telling her, I need a witness for police to believe that story. And she even offers Nicole Mobley money to call her husband and report that she had seen Gannon get into a car with a strange man the night of January 27th.
What?
Oh, and this is all via, like, you have to know that these messages can be recalled. Like, investigators are going to see this stuff, but, and she said, what if you just said you remembered something suspicious seeing this picture and explain the description and you didn't think it was relevant until now because the kid had the same cover? So what she's saying is because Gannon was found like covered with a blanket from the home or whatever. And so she's saying, what if you say you saw this picture and you saw that blanket and you're like, wait a second, that was the blanket that he was found in. And now I remember he got into a like.
Right.
And she's like, I swear I did not do this. I just need help with someone getting this out there so they can start posting it in other states. So Nicole Mobley was like, you're full of shit. And she contacted law enforcement and turned everything over to them. So good on her.
Yes.
For every single witness that took the stand, the prosecution asked the same question. Was Letitia Stauch sane during this time? Was she acting appropriately? Was she able to follow the rules of the road when she was driving? Did you have any reason to believe that she couldn't care for herself or for the children that were in her care, you know, during this time? Like anything that would indicate that she's not mentally sane at this time. And every single one of them is like, no, I mean, she seemed fine to me. Like the assistant principal at the school that Letitia had just been hired at testified that like during her interview process, you know, there was no behavior that was out of the ordinary. She seemed to act very appropriately, answer questions the way that you would expect. I mean, she was like, I obviously felt like she did a good job because I hired her to care for children, you know? Right. So there was nothing that made it seem like something like this was coming, right? And Al said, you know, I believe that Letitia has been sane. He said, from the time I met her to even today, like, this is just who she is, right?
Right.
All right, let's talk about the fake polygraph. So, yeah, Letitia contacted some company online to get a fake polygraph result that I guess she was going to share with Al.
Why would you, how is there even a service that offers this? I didn't know this was a thing.
I didn't either. It's interesting though, because yeah, I don't know why you would want to use that. Like, I guess for fun. Like, I wonder how much money they make. Like, do enough people want to get fake polygraphs that, you know, but they have a rule.
I was going to say, go ahead.
If the content of the questions talk about illegal activities, they don't have to give you the report. Like, they're not going to give you that if it has to do anything with illegal activities or whatever. So Letitia had gone to this website. She had created this fake polygraph with her answers and everything. And she paid for it with a credit card online. And she didn't get the report. And so she called them. And investigators actually intercepted this call, and she asks about a confirmation number for a test she paid for. Then she calls back a second time. She's like, I still don't have my test. And so that during that phone call, the, you know, guy that she talked to on customer service was like, well, yeah, it had to do with illegal activity and we don't give reports that contain that information.
Right.
And, she said, what do you do now? Just delete it and go on about life and keep the money? And he goes, yes, we do indeed. That's exactly what we're going to do, actually.
I love that.
She was pissed. Dakota Lowry, Letitia's brother, testified. His testimony was absolutely heartbreaking as well. He couldn't even get through, like, you know, giving his name and his relation, you know, to the defendant. He was already in tears. I mean, it was just heartbreaking. Mm. But during that part, so they hadn't really got into his testimony yet. And so they're like, you know, what's your name and what's your relation and blah, blah, blah. And he just like puts his head in his hands and he just starts like crying. And he goes, why, Tisha? Why? Like he just, it's just so sad. And so the judge tells him, like, okay, we're gonna take a break. They excuse the jury. He takes a break and then he continues with his testimony. But his testimony is very important because he saw Letitia with the suitcase that we learned later contained Gannon's body. And she was struggling with it. It was really heavy. And she was having a hard time getting it into her car. And he asked her, what is in the suitcase that's so, you know, like, what are you carrying around? And the prosecutor was like, why did you feel like you needed to ask her that? And he's like, it was just weird. Like, she was struggling a lot with it. It was really weird. It seemed just incredibly heavy, you know, like, what do you have in there that's that heavy? And she said it was full of softball stuff. He said that initially when they learned that she had killed Gannon, he thought it had to have been some kind of mental break or something because, you know, to him, he was like, I never would have thought she would do something like this, right?
Right.
But he says after seeing her, like, reactions, how she's handled herself, seeing all the other evidence, the blood evidence, the Google searches, her reactions and her stories and changing stories and like all that stuff. He's like, I don't think it's mental health issues. I think she just did this. Like, you know, he's like, I don't think that way anymore. They did bring a reporter up to testify. He interviewed Letitia on January 30th, 2020. And in the interview, she says, it's very interesting because it's just like a news, you know, this was Chris Watts' demise too, giving all these news interviews, part of his demise. He's asking her, you know, tell us about Gannon and all that kind of stuff. Because at this point, he's still missing. His body has not been found. And so she's like, he was just a great kid. He was always so helpful. Anytime I would need help with anything, I could ask him and he would just help. And she was talking specifically about him in the past tense, right? And it was noticeable. And then at the end, he says, okay, if you could give Gannon a message right now, what would it be? Like, if he sees this. And she's like, well, Gannon, when you come home, you'll be able to tell the truth of what happened. And I hope that I get a sincere apology from everyone who thinks that I've done something to you, especially my husband. And then she says, hang on, can I redo that answer? That's not the one I want to do. And he's
the mask
okay.
slipped.
Mm-hmm. And then she starts crying and she's like, please come home. We just miss you. We just need you here. And like,
that's scary that she can like turn it right on.
Yeah. Two different people. Now, not dissociative identity disorder, two different people. These are not.
This is sociopath, two different people.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because she, I mean, yeah, it came out and she was just like, well, when you come back, I'm going to get, you know, I hope I get a sincere apology from everyone who's been, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, wait a second, that doesn't make me look good. Let me change it. And then she's able to cry.
And scene.
Exactly. Harley Hunt, Letitia's daughter, testified. And that was
poor
difficult.
Thing.
I know.
God, I just feel so bad for like everybody that had to testify.
I do too. And, you know, she was a minor at the time that this happened. She was 17. Letitia is her biological mother. Her dad died when she was, I think, like 12 or 13 years old, which she didn't find out until all of this. That her mom had lied to her about how her dad had died. She had told her when she was like, you know, younger that her dad had died because somebody broke into his house and killed him. And then she
that
found
is so
out.
So Letitia.
Exactly. And she found out online that her dad had died from an overdose. She was not told that. So she's been manipulating everybody in her life, you know, but to do that to your own child is just. Awful. And Harley was almost charged as an accessory because she was on the trip with Letitia from Colorado Springs to Florida.
And then Carolinas? What did they go mm-hmm. to the Yeah.
But I think after I don't believe she knew any of this.
No.
Has to be just so difficult for her. So they asked her, you know, like during that trip, you guys are in the car. Is she talking about Gannon at all? Is she talking about finding him? Like, did you ask her, why are we going to Florida? Why are we not helping look for Gannon and all this kind of stuff? And she's like, no, not really. I didn't really ask her anything. I just kind of accepted what, you know, whatever she told me, I went along with. And they said, well, what would happen to you if you questioned her? And she's like, well, normally if I question her, say anything to her about anything, she would say that I'm back talking her, that I'm being disrespectful, and she would backhand me in the face or the mouth. So no, I didn't question her. I just went along with it. That was really sad. And then the defense cross-examined her. I understand that they have to try to pick apart credibility and all that kind of stuff, but just doing this, I just thought was awful. So the defense's tactic with Harley was to show that she is a manipulator, that she is the one who manipulates the facts to get what she wants out of it. And so he asked her, do you ever manipulate situations for your own benefit? And she's like, no. And he's like, okay. Well, you started a GoFundMe after all this happened or whatever. And she's like, yeah. And he said, so I guess at some point her aunt had bought her a car. Then they got into a disagreement or something. The aunt took it back. She started a GoFundMe account because she needed to get back and forth to nursing school. She was in nursing school at the time. And in the GoFundMe, she says, many of you know my story. I lost my parents. I lost both my parents. I can't remember if she said the word recently or a few years ago or something like that. And he's like, well, that makes people think that both of your parents are dead. And she was like, no, I didn't say they were both dead. And he's like, well, you didn't lose your mom. She was just in prison. And she's like, no, I lost her. I lost her. He's like, well, but you knew people would think that they were dead. And didn't your dad die when you were much younger, not recently or whatever? And she's like, right. But I lost my mom. Like now at this point in recent events, I had lost both my parents by that point. And he's like, well, she was like, the GoFundMe site was a central place for my friends and family who know me to be able to help me get through this monetarily or whatever. He's like, but didn't you have an idea that people who didn't know you would read it and they would think that your parents were both dead and then they would give you money? And she's like, I mean, no, like whatever. It just was so icky, just icky. Like she 100% did lose both of her parents. We talk about that all the time. When a parent is the one who commits the murder, it's like you lose the parent that has killed. And then you lose the other parent because you lose them to the justice system. Like it just, I don't know. It was just awful.
Yeah. Well, and I don't love anybody that wants to pick apart a boundary that you have put into place with a parent or a family member, because, you know, a lot of people will say, well, that's your mom though, but that's your dad. That you, life is short, whatever. Okay. Well, if they have continually treated me poorly throughout my entire life, or if like something like this, my mother killed my stepbrother and now is in prison, and I decide that I don't want to have a relationship with this person anymore, that is not like, it drives me crazy because people try to, not everybody, but there are people who try to diminish it, like this defense attorney. And I kind of understand it's their job, but still, it's like, she's been through enough. Like, what are you doing?
Exactly. She's a victim too.
Yes, absolutely.
It's just awful what she's doing, and solidifies her decision to not have a relationship with her mom, I'm sure. Like, I hope that was worth it, but it seemed like she was kind of scared of her mom anyway, you know? It doesn't seem like
she can't even ask her questions. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's just sad. It's so sad. All right, Google searches, y'all, buckle up on the Google searches. So, FBI agent John Grusing testified about his interrogation of Letitia, and then also the, you know, report that they pulled of all her Google searches and stuff like that. A week before Gannon went missing, Letitia started searching for things like U-Haul truck rates from Colorado Springs to Orlando, Florida, U-Haul truck rates, like the trip, how long would the trip take, all that kind of stuff.
Oh my.
A week before. Now remember, she, in one of her not remember. You guys don't know that I listened to this. When I listened to one of the phone calls, one of the things that she said to Al was, this kind of stuff is premeditated, Al. I did not, like, I would have had to plan to kill Ganon if I was going to kill him. Like, this kind of stuff is like, you don't just wake up and decide to do this or whatever. Like, I would have had to premeditate it. And nothing shows that I was planning anything like this or anything like this. But we've got, starting a week before, at least, she already knows that she's going to take a U-Haul from Colorado Springs to Orlando, Florida.
Yeah, the wheels are in motion.
Yeah. One of the searches that she conducted was blood is spurting from an arterial bleed, direct pressure not controlling.
Oh, my.
When he asked her about that one, she's like, what? No, I never did that. Not my phone. I never did that. He's like, oh, yes, you did. This was on your phone. She's like, no, I didn't do that. Other searches, I don't like my stepson. I don't like my stepson. Should I get a divorce? And she's notorious for misspelling shit all the time. And she puts periods instead of spaces all the time. And one of them that she searched was, my husband's ex-wife does nothing for her lids.
Obviously, I think that kids, that's bad. Ooh, but you need to take care of the lids too.
Well, they're the window to the soul.
Yeah. Those are important.
I wonder if my husband's ex-wife is sending me a Valentine's card since I period raised period her period kids.
Why would you? What is the point of Googling that?
Exactly. That's what I want to. What is she expecting to get from these Google searches?
It's not a fucking magic eight ball.
Exactly. It's, you can't type something in there and be like, what do you think? You think Landon's going to give me something or not? Like,
right.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Why should my husband choose me over family? Parents are those that put their kids before their nails.
Their nails.
Maybe.
What is that even?
Maybe Landon goes and gets her nails done or something. I don't know.
Oh, I don't. Yeah,
it was interesting. Son homesick, can he stay home? Al Stauch cheating. Al Stauch Instagram. Al Stauch cheating in Colorado Springs. Catch Al Stauch cheating.
What?
How to get blood out of sheets.
Ooh. Does she think that she's going to find all of these articles that are like, this just in, Al Stauch, she caught cheating.
Like, exactly. Yeah, it's like, yeah, people aren't like documenting everything that Al is doing.
No.
And it's, you know, if he was like taking pictures with another woman and posting them on Instagram, he's not like, here's me cheating on my wife with this woman. Like,
right. Al Stauch is cheating on Letitia Stauch. Ugh. Yeah.
She's a nut job.
Idiot.
Can I spray paint blood? I'm doing all the work for my stepkids and their mom doesn't know.
It's not funny. It's incriminating completely, but it's just so outlandish and ridiculous. Like, take her phone away. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Find me a new husband. Find me a rich guy who wants someone to take care of his kids. One of them was like, taking care of somebody else's kids, but get paid, like stuff like that.
So you want to be a nanny?
Oh, yeah. And one of them was,
oh my God.
I don't know if I wrote this one down, but one of them was, basically, like, my husband treats me like a nanny for his kids, and parenting should be four people, not one. What do you think is going to come up with this search? Parenting, yeah, exactly. Should be four, like, people, not one.
Yeah, I just don't understand, like, what is the goal typing this in?
And nobody talks this way either. Like, you know, like, you're not going to find an article that is like, parenting should be four people, not one. And like, here's right. What you should do if you're married to somebody and you're taking care of all the kids and the husband and the ex-wife are not helping. Like, that's not,
she's treating it like a Dear Abby or a magic eight ball. And that does not make any sense to me, because that's not how the internet works, really. Like my search history recently specifically, but like this morning I was like, can you substitute Greek yogurt for mayonnaise? That's something that will get me results.
Exactly. Like she clearly doesn't know how the internet works.
No.
You will never forgive me and treat me like a princess.
What?
What do you do if you suspect a person swallowed poison? That might actually get...
That like I think CDC that would get... Yes.
Article or something. One day people will wish they treated you differently. My husband wants a baby, but I want to divorce him. My husband wants a divorce.
She needs
You'll
a
never know when it's too late. Google search. What the fuck? The FBI agent also said on redirect, because he had asked her to tell him, like, what's your last memory of Gannon? You know, what was he wearing? What was he, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, quote, her not being able to articulate a last image of Gannon was very indicative that the last image was awful. I came away with more of a certainty that something bad had happened to Gannon.
Ugh, gosh.
Ugh. So, you know, they go through all of the phone pings and all of those kind of things. And, you know, it just shows, I mean, basically everything that they found corresponded with everywhere that Letitia went, and then everywhere that evidence was found, including Gannon's body. You know, they obviously talked about all the blood spatter in the home, on his mattress, on the walls. Like, all of those things show that he was killed in the home. Mm-hmm. The van that they were driving, there was evidence that Gannon's body had been in there. And that's one thing that Harley said. She thought it was really weird that when they were driving, she said she never did smell anything weird. She obviously never opened the suitcase or anything. But she said that one thing that she thought was weird was that it was really cold outside and her mom was like blasting the air conditioning the whole time in the car. Mm-hmm. Of course, she's not going to ask her any questions because she's not allowed to do that. But, you know. Dr. Christine Moore, the mental health director at the El Paso County Jail, testified to an assessment that she had done of Letitia on March 5th, 2020. She said that Letitia appeared calm and polite throughout the interview. Letitia had denied having any disorders, inpatient or outpatient treatment. Dr. Jackie Grimmett, a forensic psychologist, testified to a competency evaluation that she performed on Letitia in December of 2020. For the purpose of determining whether she had a mental disability. And Grimmett said that Stauch had an understanding of the proceedings and was able to assist in her own defense. They found that she did not have a mental disability. Grimmett said that she found Stauch to be very verbose and that Letitia told her a story about vampires visiting her in her jail cell, but admitted that she had gotten the names of the vampires from the Twilight series. She's obviously trying to beef up her insanity defense. We know that that's the route we're going to have to go or whatever. So she's like, oh, yeah, vampires are visiting me in jail. And she's telling this woman about it. And she's like, isn't that from Twilight? Like, aren't those the names of the Twilight? And she's like,
Edward. And I don't know any. I've never seen the Twilight movie.
Bella, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like,
Jacob.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's their names too. But these are real vampires.
I'm shocked that she didn't Google how to make people think you're insane.
Exactly. Vampires visiting me in jail. What are their names?
Yeah. Like, right.
Grimmett testified that she felt Letitia was feigning some of her symptoms and that she had traits of borderline personality disorder and narcissistic personality. But she didn't meet the threshold for either diagnosis. She just, you know, had
registered on the spectrum possibly or something.
Yeah. Dr. Loandra Torres, a forensic psychologist who conducted competency and sanity evaluations on Letitia. And they actually watched a portion of this forensic interview the jury did during the trial. During this interview is when Letitia describes an accidental shooting where she shot somebody who was wearing a cape and she didn't know that it was Gannon at the time. So this is kind of that whole, like, was it Eduardo that was in the house? Was it Quincy Brown that was in the house? Whoever it was in the house, There was an altercation. She tried to shoot them. She didn't realize it was Gannon that she shot.
Liza Minnelli.
Yeah. She would say during this interview that she hoped she was going into different personalities. She said she thought she could bring Gannon back from the dead, like stuff like that. Dr. Dorothy Lewis was the mental health professional for the defense, and she testified that she believed that Letitia was switching into different personalities at the time of the crime due to the sexual abuse that she had suffered growing up. And in her interview with Letitia, she spoke as her alleged alternate identities, Maria and Taylor. And when she was speaking as Maria, she spoke with an accent and said that she shot Gannon thinking that he was an intruder, saying he wasn't supposed to die. It wasn't supposed to be him.
What do you think? You have the eyes. You have the face.
I mean, no, I think she's just trying to minimize her
involvement. Absolutely. Responsibility with it. And I do think that it's interesting. I mean, I've seen some 11-year-old kids, and I've seen some grown-ups in my day. I've seen them both. I've seen grown men standing next to an 11-year-old kid. They don't look anywhere close to the same. So the fact that she thought, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that it was like that. Again, I know too much buy this. It's just...
Right. You know, we'll never see a picture of Eduardo because he's not real, but... Yeah, I would assume that. Yeah, and I haven't seen Quincy Brown. I never even thought to look him up. But
he's grown.
Exactly. Like, you would think that. I mean, she said that she drove to a construction site and plucked Eduardo up from it, and then gave him the code to her house to get in when she wasn't there, and she didn't know him. But anyway, yeah, that you would be able to tell the difference between him and an 11-year-old child.
Yeah,
and. She does a lot of stuff that's supposed to support her insanity defense, but it's stuff that these mental health professionals can see right through.
Right.
Like, it's very obvious that she's faking it. And again, because she was planning this. She started a week beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Planning the route she was going to take. You know, all of the things she had been searching, things about how she did not like her stepson and how she resented being his caretaker and that Al was gone all the time. And she even said, why should my husband choose me over family?
Yeah.
So if she gets rid of Gannon, I mean, I wonder if she was planning to kill the little one, too.
I know it.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. So basically... All of these things, I mean, I honestly don't know why they needed this long of a trial. I mean, I guess you got to lay everything out, but it's pretty obvious to me what.
Yeah, 100%.
So on May 8th, 2023, after deliberating for just 8 hours, the jury returned and delivered a verdict, and they found Letitia Stout guilty of first degree murder.
Shocking.
Exactly. Al gave a victim impact statement at the conclusion of the trial, including a written statement from his daughter, Lena. He expressed how thankful he was for the bridge workers who found Gannon's remains and brought their son back to him. Al said that from the moment he went to look for Letitia's Tiguan at a nearby elementary school, which is, you know, where she had said it was parked, and didn't see it, he knew that she knew where Gannon was. Like, it was in that moment everything changed for him. Al told the judge that he was not seeking restitution from Letitia, that he didn't want to have anything connecting him to her. He described how different Letitia seemed when he first met her. He said a far cry from the nappy-headed, murderous, narcissistic, and arrogantly flippant human being that sits in our midst today. She is nappy-headed, too. Apparently, good, they don't issue brushes in jail. Yeah.
Maybe the vampires stole it.
Well, that's true. Did we even ask them? Somebody call Edward and see if he's got Letitia's brush.
Yeah.
He called Letitia a coward for not admitting what she'd done to his son and that she was too much of a lily-livered, self-centered, pathological liar to ask for forgiveness. Al spoke of how he felt that he'd lost two children, Gannon and Harley. He loved Harley, but he didn't know if their relationship could be saved. And it's clear that Al felt overwhelmed with guilt and apologized to his son for leaving him alone with a murderer. He disclosed that he and Landon had both apologized to each other and that they'd let Letitia manipulate them both, which had caused problems. Finally, he addressed the judge, saying that if he could have any input as to Letitia's sentence, he wanted her to be stripped of his name. He did not want her to be Letitia Stout anymore. They had finalized their divorce in the same year that Gannon was murdered, but Letitia had kept the last name Stout. And he believed just to spite him.
She would. I mean, it's very, very tracks for her.
He said, secondly, I ask for every mile that she drove Gannon across the country, she spend one day in solitary confinement. After that, I recommend her sentence to be equal to every year she stripped off Gannon's life. Lastly, for every year of Harley's life that she abusively manipulated that child, she should have an additional year of prison.
That really, really resonated with me because that, to me, I don't blame him one little bit. And I think that that should be imposed.
Yeah, exactly. The judge did sentence Letitia to life in prison without the possibility of parole. He also sentenced Letitia to another life sentence to run concurrently for the first-degree murder of a child under the age of 12. Additionally, he gave her 12 years for tampering with the body and 18 months for tampering with evidence. She is currently serving her sentence at the Colorado Department of Corrections. And Gannon was finally laid to rest in September of 2020 in his home state of South Carolina, 7 months after he was murdered in his own bed. Gannon's mother spoke about his smile and how he had the heart and spirit of an old man. She said that he'd do anything for anyone. Gannon's little sister described him as the nicest person, her only brother, and her favorite brother.
Oh, that's so sad.
Which was like such a cute little joke they had. And that's it.
Fuck Letitia, man.
100%.
And I don't know. She doesn't sound like she was ever a gem to have it had in your life. I'm just confused how she pulled Al in the first. Like, how did she land him? I'm confused. And no shade against him. Like, it happens sometimes. But I don't get it. I don't see her appeal. I don't see.
Right. And but that lends itself to the whole like kind of, you know, narcissistic tendencies and stuff like that, because I'm sure that she did what many manipulative and abusive partners do, which is everything's great at first.
Well, and they kind of mirror what you want, need, right?
All of a sudden they have and all the things.
Yes,
and
the exact same interest that you do. And you guys could not have be more of a perfect match. And then,
And then once you've already fallen in love with them, then they start doing some of these other things.
True. Good call. Good point.
So, I mean, I'm sure that, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because she, you can hear in some of these calls and in her interviews and stuff like that, where she does sound very articulate and educated and put together and polished and like all those things. She can turn that on. And that's how she's getting, you know, jobs where she's teaching children. And so, like,
yeah.
But she's a nut job, an absolute nut job.
100% crazier than a shithouse rat. I don't.
Yeah. And she was able to hide that from everybody.
Yes. That's scary. Hide in plain sight, too. That is scary. But guys, I mean, that's it.
That's it for our two-parter here.
Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We love you. And we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation. Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week. Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud. Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.